The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on the button on this Wednesday, the 23rd of July. How are you all keeping? I do hope you are very well indeed. And it's another cracking show in store for you over the next 3 hours. What are we going to be looking forward to? Well, there's a game on Sunday. We'll probably have some content in relation to the big game on Sunday. The Mary from Dunloe Festival kicks off soon. We're going to have Pat and Gavin in studio to talk about what you can expect from that big annual event, and so much more besides. We're still looking for your angles on the game for Sunday. Maybe you're abroad, maybe you've got some great memories from 92 or 2012. Any old angles at all, we'd love a chat with you. 086 60 25000. We threw out in the show yesterday about pictures of particularly the young people being loaded into the Sam Maguire, and in some cases attempted to be loaded into the cup. And my word, I couldn't believe the response. We had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and we all did the same thing, and it was fantastic. And there's loads of those images shared on our social media as well. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have another crop of 1992 babies, 2025 babies, if we win on Sunday and that cup ends up doing its tour. Right, you can give us a call, by the way, 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And we're a very visual show, and we're the only radio station or show in Ireland where you can watch it in its entirety by going to the YouTube app, and that's on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. So maybe you're at home, you're on holidays, or you work from home or work in the home. Stick us on the corner. Why watch This Morning as they talk about some nonsense relating to a place far, far away, when you can watch us? As I say, just open up the YouTube app, type in Highland Radio Ireland, and we're there streaming live for you. And you can see most of our guests and our content as well. We stream across the Facebook pages as well, and on the X platform, formerly Twitter. Let's look at the papers this morning. We'll start with the Irish Times. Plans to spend an extra $9.4 billion in public services, or on public services, tax cuts and building projects next year will be reconsidered if the US imposes tariffs on EU imports, ministers warned yesterday, which is obviously common sense because we'd have less money. But coalition leaders pledged that if there was pressure on spending plans, they would protect infrastructure budgets and cut growth in current spending on public services, welfare and tax cuts to realise the necessary savings. And what that means effectively is, when things have gotten tight in this country historically, the first thing you cut is spending on capital projects. So next thing you know, well, that road that was due to go ahead, the country's finances are tight. We're not going to do that now. We're going to push that back. Or the Metro Link, our finances are tight. We're not going to do that because we need to make sure that we have enough money for social welfare and what have you. What this government is doing, they're saying that they're actually going to ring fence the capital spending because that's essential for the maintenance and growth of the country. So that is a bit of a step change. Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Public Expenditure, Jack Chambers, along with the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Taoiseach Simon Harris, launched a review of the National Development Plan, promising to spend $100 billion between now and 2030, a €30 billion euro increase over what was planned to improve water, energy, transport and housing infrastructure. And I think we all agree that that is precisely what is needed. The ambitious plans were overshadowed by the threat of a trade war between the EU and the US, which Mr. Donoghue and Mr. Chambers admitted could compel them to revise plans published yesterday for a budget day package of $9.4 billion in October. But look, the reality is this is what Donald Trump does. He's just agreed a deal with Japan. There's other deals coming as well. And that's just the way it is. And Donald Trump and Europe will agree. They will agree probably at somewhere between, you know, 12 and 19%, if I were to guess. That's what it will be. But the thing that perplexes me a little bit is this whole tariffs thing. Like, so say, for instance, Donald Trump now, yesterday it was a 15% It was a 15% tariff agreement with Japan. So he'll only charge Japanese products 15% tariffs coming into the country. And as a result of that, Japan will open up their markets more to American cars and other American business. But that 15% is going on the taxpayer, the regular folk of the United States of America. The tariff, a tariff, an import tariff is an import tax. And you'll see if you were in America and you were shopping on Amazon, you will see the tax. It comes in as a tariff. So do you ever buy an electrical product, a phone or something from Amazon, and there's a customs charge that you have to pay? That's a tariff. That is a post-Brexit tariff. And that's so I can't understand, and maybe it's my ignorance, how some people might hail this as a great deal for America, where anything Americans buy from Japan now has got 15% on top of it. So instead of costing 100 quid, it's $115. Do you know what I mean? I don't see how that is good for the consumer of America. But anyway, maybe I'm missing something. So there you go. But obviously, if we sell into America with an additional 15%, let's say that's what we get, it makes our products less desirable. And also, too, as money tightens in the United States, they're less likely to spend, so it can have an effect. Right, so that's the NDP. As I've been saying since Monday, we weren't going to know the ins and outs of that anyway, and the papers should have known that as well. It's going to be months before individual projects are announced. The one thing I will note, though, and I thought it very, very interesting, and we talk about how, you know, we in the Northwest are sort of overlooked at times. And I'm sorry if I sound like I'm moaning. I don't mean to moan. But I was listening to the head of Chambers Ireland, and it's just so passive and natural for us to be overlooked. So I think Letterkenny Chamber would be part of Chambers Ireland as well. But he was, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was talking about the importance of regional development. And he listed off a few projects, the Western Corridor, which is, would benefit us, but not, you know, it's not really for us as such. The Metro and a couple of other things. No mention of the Northwest at all. And it's that's they were casually forgotten, if you know what I mean. It's casual forgetfulness that the Northwest doesn't seem to matter, even though we're one of the most, if not the most, deprived in terms of investment. And that's Chambers Ireland representing businesses up here. It just would have been nice maybe if they chucked in a reference to the Northwest, but they didn't. So that's, as I say, it's the casual nature of the forgetfulness. Staying in this area, and it's the Irish Independent, workers are on course to lose out in Budget 2026 with little room for income tax cuts if a planned lower rate of VAT for hospitality goes ahead. An outline of October's budget has set aside $1.5 billion for tax cuts next year, but the cost of reducing VAT for restaurants, bars and cafes is taking up $1 billion of that. That means there'll be almost no scope for personal taxation measures to boost take-home pay during a cost-of-living crisis. And this is a tricky one, and I'm interested in your views in relation to this, because an awful lot of people can't eat out, or don't eat out, or haven't eaten out this year. I'm sure there's many of you listening right now to this show that perhaps couldn't even afford to go out for lunch or to go out for an evening meal. And instead of your life being made a little bit easier, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, maybe with some tax breaks or even some targeted measures for those on the lowest incomes, it's being given to bars, restaurants and cafes. Of course, they need a break, don't they, to keep their head above water? But that means that that money's being gobbled up to keep them afloat. Now, that's not going to make things cheaper, by the way. That's just going to make their businesses more sustainable or more profitable. So what's your feelings about that? Because you might be in a group of individuals that are not going to get any tax breaks in this budget because the money's going to the cafes, the bars and the restaurants, but you probably don't have the money at the moment to actually go into them in the first instance, if that makes sense. So you might feel like you're losing out, though I do understand that that sector does need some support. Well, launching the summer economic statement, which outlines the spending parameters for Budget 2026, Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue said plans to reduce VAT for hospitality from 13.5% to 9% are set out clearly in the programme for government. There are therefore other things that we're not going to be able to do, he said. I think it's really important to be open about what the trade-offs are. If you were to bring forward a tax package that was a fund, was to fund a full year measure that was in relation to VAT, the cost of that would be a billion. A billion. Okay, so what's your views? As I say, I'm not trying to rattle any cages here, but it's your lives, it's your incomes. This is where the money's going to go. This is what the government are saying. They've got 1.5 billion euro wiggle room in tax, but they've made a commitment in the programme for government. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of independent pressure here. That billion is going to be going to reduce the 13.5 to 9% VAT rate. I hope the hotels down in Dublin don't benefit from this, but they probably will, and the prices won't come down. But that means there's going to be no targeted cost of living measures or no great tax breaks by the government's own admission. 086 60 25,000. You would have heard that consumer watchdog inspectors were in the county recently. They carried out a string of unannounced raids. What were the raids on? Well, petrol stations and shops over mispricing. This is the Irish Daily Mail. Some filling stations have been accused of charging more for petrol than they had advertised on the price boards. The 55 inspections carried out by the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission targeted dozens of retail businesses around the country, including Donegal earlier this month. The raids included clothing, beauty, furniture, grocery and hospitality businesses. Labour Party Enterprise spokesperson George Lawler told the Irish Daily Mail last night that any such mispricing is a betrayal of customers and called on the CCPC to send a signal. On to the mirror now, and there's an image of a young boy, and he's incredibly heavily emaciated. If you can imagine what the you would imagine the images that we came familiar with from Ethiopia, for an example, the images that you might have seen on concern boxes. Well, that's what's happening to the young kids in Gaza. They're being starved to death, unfortunately, and this young child, young Mohammed, has become sort of the pictorial representation of that. He's wearing a bottoms, which is effectively a black plastic bag. And this child has not eaten. He's starving. Every bone in his body is on show. And this is being done to him. This is being done to him, and effectively being done to him with the support of, in real terms, with support of the world. Like, you can get 20 countries, 28 countries that come together, 100 charities that come together and say, Israel, you need to stop this. A ceasefire immediately. Look what you've done to this country and these people. But it's just words. It's just words, and words don't mean nothing in this instance. But maybe there could be some action. Israel could face further sanctions from the UK if it does not agree to a ceasefire in Gaza, David Lammy said, as pressure mounts to do more to stop the killing of civilians. The British Foreign Secretary said he was appalled and sickened by Israel's actions, with children among hundreds of Gazans gunned down as they wait for food. It comes as the Israel Defence Forces begin an operation targeting Deir al-Balah, the main hub for the humanitarian effort. So where people are actually going to get food now is where they're actually being targeted. And I posted a video on my socials not so long ago. As the crow flies, it's within a couple of hundred miles. Life in Israel continues as norm. And as I say, this is as the crows flies. You could drive an hour to Gaza, to the devastation in Gaza. And the image is in Israel of people walking along boulevards, palm trees, you know, the white canopies flapping, people drinking cocktails, music in the background, those white string lights as they follow a path down towards the sea. And they're just going about sipping martinis or whatever it might be, as if nothing is happening. And then, as I say, a couple of hundred miles away as the crow flies, you've got people starved to death. You've got a country absolutely destroyed. And this juxtaposition, if that's the right word, is, I can't get my head around it. It would be the equivalent of you sitting in Donegal town and this being done to the people of Derry City. You know, Derry City being wiped to the ground, people starving to death, kids with their bones poking out, and you'd be sitting there and you would be part of how this happens, sitting there chilling out, enjoying the summer vibes, listening to music. I don't know what the mass population of Israel thinks of what's going on, because often I would clarify and say that, you know, the Israeli government are not necessarily reflective of the Israeli people. But is there a rising of protests in Israel against what the government are doing to these human beings? I don't know. Well, I do know. No, The Sun this morning. Investigators want to meet jailed Madame Ghislaine Maxwell face to face and ask her to name the accomplishments of her paedophile ex-boyfriend Jeffrey Epstein. The US Department of Justice has requested a jail sit-down with the British socialite and the FBI. Last night, Donald Trump himself faces questions over his Epstein links. He seemed to play down the development. In fact, he claimed he didn't know. Asked about a meeting, the US president told reporters in the Oval Office, "I don't know anything about it. I think it's something that sounds appropriate to do. I don't really follow that now much. It's sort of a witch hunt." Now, both Democrats and many Republicans want Donald Trump to stop trying to bury what was happening with Jeffrey Epstein and his accomplice. Donald Trump just wants it to go away, seemingly, and he's cooked up this new conspiracy as it relates to Barack Obama being responsible for trying to fiddle the elections over there. But the reporters and the public aren't buying it. He's trying his put them off the scent, but they are insisting that no, whatever is going on or went on with Epstein and Maxwell and whomever else, it needs to come out. And the more Donald Trump resists it, the more you can't help but feel that he must in some way be implicated. The shocking story we carried on the show yesterday made the national news headlines. This is the news that Gardaí are hunting three young men over a cruel hoax in which bags filled with ketchup and arranged to resemble a body were put in a road to frighten a motorist. The incident happened in the village of Milford on Sunday night and left a terrified motorist thinking they had hit a real person. The shocking incident occurred at the Pans, Cranford, at around 12:30 a.m. The driver and passenger of the vehicle were left shaken following the bizarre incident. Damage was also caused to the car as a result of the collision. Gardaí are very, very confident they're going to catch these guys, but they're saying, listen, come forward. It's in your best interest to come forward right now. And I suspect there's probably a lot of people out there that know exactly who these people are. And they're not going to escape justice, I don't think. People are shocked and disgusted. It's the most horrific thing, or one of the most horrific things you can do to put people through that experience for the crack or what have you, or whatever the motivation. I can't talk to the motivation. That could only be it, but it's crazy. We're joined on the programme now by Patricia Devlin, reporter with the journal.ie. Good morning to you, Patricia. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, so you've been looking into the positioning of thousands of Chinese surveillance cameras which are installed in public places across Ireland. Right, so I presume the Chinese haven't come in and planted these themselves. We must be buying them and putting them up ourselves, are we, Patricia? Give us the background.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Greg, our investigation focuses on Hikvision cameras, and this brand is a Chinese company that makes surveillance equipment, and they've also been banned in multiple countries, including the US and the UK, and their cameras are not permitted at sensitive government sites over security concerns. So when we were looking into Ireland, we looked at government departments, but we also looked at hospitals, we looked at councils and other public places. And what we found is that Hikvision is in widespread use right across Ireland, in Donegal, in Dublin, in Kerry, right all over Ireland. And this could be in courthouses, this could be in council buildings, and it could even be in swimming pools. And so the issue with that is that security experts say that in Ireland, we never really followed suit from when the UK banned these cameras in 2022. And we didn't really find out a reason why the government decided not to follow suit. And so security experts would like to know why that's the case and what security advice they've received.
I presume the fear is that there'd be an exploit within these cameras that that they could be remotely accessed by the Chinese or agents of the Chinese to gather information. Is that a suspicion or is that proven? Because the same was talked of our 5G network. And I think we continued to use Huawei, was it? Yes. When we were rolling out our 5G, while other countries didn't. We don't seem to feel there's as much of a threat in this country from China as other countries might, because it seems that there are many, many different ways, if they wish to exploit, that they could in Ireland.
Yeah, and that's, you've hit the nail on the head right there, Greg. The fear is, and you know, the EU has said and deemed China a threat to EU member states. And so Ireland is one of those states. And so we can't be lax when it comes to a country like China, who can, you know, have, could possibly hack cameras, who could use access to cameras for sinister means. I mean, we only have to look at the Ukraine, where Russia, and it wasn't Hikvision cameras, but it was Chinese-made cameras. Russia actually hacked into those cameras and helped coordinate attacks in the Ukraine. And so thankfully here, we don't have that type of threat. But what security experts say is that we need to be mindful of that. We need to know about these vulnerabilities, which have been proven in multiple reports, and also by the UK cabinet, the US government, and also Australia. The European Parliament also does not have these cameras. They are banned from inside the European Parliament. So I think really what the focus of our investigation is why has Ireland taken this decision to not follow suit? What is the security advice they receive? Perhaps they have very good security advice and they have no reason to do this, but I think that needs to be made public.
You sought to find out what the situation was in Donegal. That information wasn't forthcoming, but on the ground analysis showed that these Hikvision cameras are being employed in the county.
Yes, Letter County Council has Hikvision cameras in use. We also know that some libraries in Donegal, through FOI requests put in by the Irish Council for Civil Liberties, who also have done a very good report on this, that they are in some libraries in Donegal. But unfortunately, Donegal Council wasn't very forthcoming with information, so I can't give you a detailed breakdown, but we do know that they're in use.
What is the government advice to councils in relation to using these particular cameras, or in fact, anything relating to tech? It could be routers, it could be cameras, it could be whatever it might be. What kind of guidance comes down from government to local authorities in this regard?
Well, in terms of Hikvision, there's been absolutely no guidance. Quite a number of the councils that we spoke to and we contacted them all, quite a number said that we have received no guidance. They did receive a letter from Hikvision around 2022, 2023, when the concerns were raised by the UK government, where they give their own advice and said that there was absolutely no vulnerabilities and that no respected organisation or company had carried out research into their cameras, which is not true. Also, it's not just the security aspect here. You know, Hikvision is a company linked to the Chinese state, and they also they developed a facial recognition software to target the Uyghur community in China, who suffer serious human rights abuses there. So they're very connected to the Chinese state. So we have to take what they say with a pinch of salt. But in a nutshell, there has been no advice to councils. We asked the government what advice, security advice it had received, and they told us that they don't comment on security matters.
Which is convenient. The only thing is as significant as this is, you know, like one of the most used applications in this country is TikTok. Very strong connections to the Chinese state. I mentioned earlier on our 5G network. Every phone in our pocket has some Chinese component to it. We allow Google to track our every movement, Facebook the same at any given time. So as I say, I'm not saying for a second this is insignificant, but have we not already given up the fight that we want to use these products, these apps, and we just accept that it's possible that we're being spied on? I mean, people sitting now with their laptop open, probably with parts originating from China. It's one of the easiest cameras to exploit, and they sit with it open in their front room, if you get where I'm coming from.
Absolutely, Greg. And, you know, it's something even personally for me, having to use, you know, computers, phones every single day. We have to take our digital security more more seriously, because I think we've kind of just been thrown into it, and everything now, you know, there's a new iPhone every year, there's new software, there's new apps, and I think we all need to take that so seriously, because much of our lives now, you know, are banking, you know, even, you know, when we're contacting family, it's all online, it's all being electronic, and we all need to really take it more seriously. I do. I feel that anyway.
I've given up. I just say, right, okay, stuff it, go on, have it, have my info, because it's far easier, I think. I mean, like, you know, this is completely unrelated, but there was a time you could go on a website, right, and there were some rules and regs as to what they could or couldn't access on your computer through the cookies. Now you go on a website, it's review options, it's enable, disable, right? You go into the review options, there's a million things you tick or you don't tick. A lot of people now use secure browsing, whereby it doesn't remember your cookies, so you expect it to do that every time. And in a way, I think we're actually giving away more information now post cookie consent than we did prior, because it's just too much of a hassle. You just click OK and say, right, there you go. All right, anyway, sorry, that's off on a tangent, but there you go. Patricia, your full work, and it's a detailed piece available on the site, of course, thejournal.ie. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye, take care. That's Patricia Devlin, reporter with thejournal.ie. Check them out, they're on the internets. What does your guest make of doorbell cams? Well, I mean, we can have that conversation ourselves. What are they checking on? I mean, what's the question? I mean, I have a doorbell camera. I think they're useful because people press the button and it rings your phone and you can speak to them or see them, or it takes little snapshots of what people are doing at your front door. So what do you mean beyond what does your guest make of doorbell cams? All cameras made in China. What brand would you recommend? Well, not all made in China, but I do take your point. I mean, the fact that these cameras are in Irish swimming pools, not pointed at the pools, I presume, or in libraries, like, what is what's the security flaw there? What are they looking to get from us? A caller says, I mean, we're already compromised by our so-called allies. Look at how unsecure all our systems are with regards to America. Microsoft literally admitted in French courts last week that they'd happily dump everything they have on every European to the US president upon request. At this point, it's a case of pick your hegemony, China or the US, or we make our own, and the EU doesn't seem too keen on doing that. And Microsoft had a big security flaw. For sharing documents, mostly for businesses, and it was completely exploitable. But that didn't make massive headlines, but that was in the last couple of days. There is a site we used to use, as it didn't track your search history, called DuckDuckGo. Google have now brought out DuckDuckGo, or bought out. They use Google's rules, so your history, tracking history is not safe. Let me tell you this, they're all tracking you. And all of you don't trust any of these private companies. Why would you download Firefox, say, don't track my search history, and believe that they're not? Of course they are. Of course they are. And it's free. So it's your data that's the product for them, or any other browser for that matter. You know, WhatsApp are saying, you know, end-to-end messages are encrypted. Do you really believe that? Do you really believe that the FBI, the CIA, or the Chinese, or the Russians, for that matter, can't decrypt stupid WhatsApp messages? Of course they can. They can crack these very secure phones. They can certainly do that. Anyway, don't go on the internet looking at stuff, you know, that could compromise your security, because, of course, someone's going to know exactly what you're doing. A caller says, any update on the surgical hub? Did the health minister decide? Sligo or Letterkenny? All went quiet about it. Thanks. Well, there was a little bit of a spell of time before a new meeting. So we will give you an update that as soon as we get it. Claire Irwin, Project Community Coordinator with Irwin Consulting. Good morning to you, Claire.
On Saturday, 8th of August.
Oops, no, someone's listening to us on the radio at the same time. Tara McDade, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing Hello good. There. And you're there as well, Claire. How are you? Claire Irwin's Project Community Coordinator from Irwin Consultant, and Tara McDade, Territory Manager with the PTSB. Claire, talk to me about the, or Tara, maybe I'll start with you. Talk to me about the event that's coming up in Letterkenny.
Yeah, so we have an event here on Thursday night in the Mount Errigal Hotel from 6:30 to 8:30, and I'm delighted we're joined with Claire Irwin. I know Claire's on the line here with us. But, you know, on the night here, Claire has done a similar event in Buncrana, and there was huge uptake for that event, huge interest. And given, you know, here in Donegal, or here in the Letterkenny area, in the surrounding area, we have a lot of new builds going on, and we have a lot of rebuilds going on, and we have a lot of people, as we've seen there lately, from findings that there's a lot of people applying for derelict home grants as well through Donegal. So we thought it prevalent to try and host a joint event here in Letterkenny to talk about everything about SSE grants and all of that, and the SBCI financing as well. So Claire, very much on the night, is going to talk about all the grants that are available and how to go about it and the steps that people need to undertake. And then from ourselves then, we've obviously partnered with SBCI to provide these home energy upgrade loans as well. So we'll talk more about that on the night.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, we're talking in all spaces, but as we heard from Tara there, we have the greatest interest in the vacant stroke derelict property grant scheme here. And, you know, you can tie in the SEIA grants with that, Claire.
Yeah, absolutely. The SEIA energy upgrade grants are available to any homeowner who's carrying out any form of an energy upgrade. So that could be a vacant or a derelict grant, vacant or a derelict house that they're refurbishing, the house that they're living in, if they decide to increase the energy rating, be it by solar panels, installing a heat pump. It's open to the defective concrete block homeowners. So it's open to anyone really that's renovating an existing property and trying to increase the energy rating. This grant scheme, it's a great grant scheme, and now the SBCI loan scheme that goes with it is just a tremendous help for homeowners to help to finance that.
Right, who can talk to me a bit more about that? Because often it's making up the shortfall that's the block for people. So is that you, Claire?
Yeah, that's it, Greg. You know, homeowners have great aspirations to carry out renovations and to do all this work to homes, but the cost of it is just stifling in the current market. The grants are amazing, but homeowners have to finance these grants, which is unrealistic for the vast majority of people, to be honest. So this loan scheme is phenomenal in that it's a low interest loan. It's an unsecured loan, so you don't have to jump through the same hoops that you would if, say, for example, if you were applying for a mortgage. So it helps homeowners. So what we're seeing 9 times out of 10 homeowners now that are carrying out the energy upgrades and that are registered with ourselves, they're going for the SBCI loan. It's, you know, there's a lot of, like, we'll explain everything on the night, but there's great waste incentives for homeowners to take it out. You know, it's cheaper than some of the other loans that are on offer. It's easier to attain than a mortgage. And it bridges the gap just until those loans come back. Or if the homeowner wants to prolong the payment over 10 years, so be it. You know, that option's available. And a lot of homeowners do choose to do that also, yeah.
There is a lot of interest. I mean, you can see the you know, the window companies outside houses, the solar panels on roofs all over the place. I mean, there is an appetite. I think the word's got around that there is money to be saved, there is energy to be created. You know, because often that's the biggest hurdle is to actually get the buy-in. But I think the people are buying in now, Claire. They're just now they're looking for ways to be able to do it if they've got less income than others.
Yeah, the grants, don't get me wrong, are really, really good. They're a brilliant help, and they definitely offer that buy-in to the homeowners. It incentivizes the homeowners to, say, install solar panels or change their windows or insulate their walls. It's a big help. And homeowners repeatedly are coming back to me after they've completed works to, you know, explain how much they're saving, or if they've put on solar panels on their roof, you know, the fact that their electricity bills are in credit over the summer months, or if they install a battery pack along with solar panels, for example, that they're able to buy electricity at night time in the cheaper rate. So with cost of living at the minute being so high, people are more and more conscious of the cost of running your house. So it's not just about how much it costs to renovate or upgrade the energy rating of your house, but it's also the fact that you're going to be bringing down the running costs of your homes. So no, it's brilliant. It's great. It's a great help to have these grants and the loan offering.
Yeah, I've went through the website myself, and the grants are almost instantly approved. It is a relatively simple. That was just for insulation I was looking at. I'm not sure if it's the same with other areas of it, but it is. The money's sitting there, and it is made as simple as is possible. But I suppose, Tara, the reason nights like this are important is for some people, and I can be one of those, is where do you start? How does this tie into the derelict property scheme? Where do I begin if I want to start upgrading my home? Do I start with the panels? Do I start with insulation? Do I start with windows? You know, that's... or if you're going through that defective concrete block nightmare... Yeah. You know, where's the brain space to start worrying about, you know, triple glazed windows or solar panel capacity? Do you know what I mean? So information nights like this useful, I would imagine, in making these decisions more clear.
Yeah, and the one thing I would caveat to, like, very much as Claire started with, you know, Claire will go out to the homes and do the home energy assessment and all of that to qualify for the SPCA loan, and then clients can come to us. Now, we have an online option if clients want to do it online, but as you quite rightly said, a lot of people are overwhelmed at the minute with everything that's coming at them. We very much can take the clients on into the branches and help them with that online application. And I do want to caveat as well, it's not just open. I don't want people thinking that they can't come in the night if they're not a PTSB customer. It's open to existing PTSB customers and new customers. Anybody can come for information night. And I mean, you can avail of it through yourselves. You don't have to be a customer.
But I think that's an interesting point to make, Tara, because I had a homeowner recently and they bank with another bank. Yeah. And for whatever reason, they went to Permanent TSB. They didn't have a bank account and they were able to get approval for the loan. I think they actually knew the local bank manager in Bunkranna, Triona. That's what drew them in.
Right, so the event, it's an information evening. It features Community Project Coordinator Claire Irwin, who we're speaking to here, of course, from RTE's Room to Improve. It's in the Mount Errigal Hotel Letterkenny. It runs from 6:30pm to 8:30pm. And presumably, Tara, you would like people, so you get a good idea of numbers, to let you know if they're going. So how am I to do that?
Yeah, you can see on, we have an invite there. I shared it with yourselves as well, Greg, but it's RSVP Letterkenny at PTSB, so just the four letters, PTSB.ie. Look, I mean, if somebody doesn't get time to do the response, please don't feel that you can't turn up on the night, but preferably if you could, it's just to give a sense of numbers, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's always good. Tara McDade, thanks very much indeed. Take care of yourself. Tara is Territories Manager with the PTSB. Claire Irwin, thank you so much for your time as well. I'm sure you'll have a great evening tomorrow evening as well, given the success of the previous event. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. Have a good day. Take care. The Donegal Piper is with me now. And of course, the Donegal Piper is Christy Murray. How are you getting on, Christy?
Not so bad, Greg. Excited like everybody else.
Yes, it is very exciting, isn't it? You play the bagpipes at every Donegal game. And I think you're an icon. I can call you an icon. You've been doing it now for a quarter of a century. How do you get into a role like that, Christy?
Crazy. I'm a musician, and I saw a piper at a game 25 years ago, and they lost that day. It was a Dublin piper. They gave me the idea, and then I bought a uniform, and it grew from that.
You're originally from Scotland, are you, or you were raised in Scotland? You come back then and took up residence in Rafoe. What age were you when you moved back to Rafoe?
6.
Oh, wow. Okay. Are you a local yet?
I'm a blow-in, and now I'm blowing.
Okay. And did you always, you didn't pick up the pipes because you saw someone and thought it was good. I know you've got a musical background. Had you always played the pipes, Christy?
Yeah, there were two pipe bands in Rafoe when I arrived, and I took an interest, and I started the whistle first, and then I started the pipes when I was 13. And I've been playing music since I was 9 years of age. Then I taught marching bands when I was 21, and then I went on to teaching around schools. So it's been my life. So it has.
Yeah, spreading the message of music.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're passionate about music, they say, you know, I'm not saying you haven't worked hard, don't get me wrong, but if you love your work, you never work a day in your life. I kind of get the feeling you enjoyed everything that you've been doing.
Yeah, I was playing in a nursing home last night for a very good friend of mine, and my eyes were closed and I was lost in my music. You wouldn't have thought it was a week before All-Ireland, but yeah, music's a great leveller, but it's great to the heart too.
Yeah, indeed. And you started up a band and it became very successful and went on to win All-Ireland titles at the Fla as well. I mean, it was a very quick turnaround, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was cutting my teeth in the Fla, and after 4 years, we won an All-Ireland title with St. Ewan's Youth Band. And then myself, my good friend Conor Porter, went on to teach for Melton Town Band, and they won a lot of All-Ireland titles too. And it introduced me to Irish music. So I have a gra for Irish music too. Mm. And I started a session in Rafal then. So yeah, it just takes me on a journey.
And, you know, there's going to be hundreds of people listening to us, if not more, who you've taught over the years. So when you're called in and say, look, you've had that success with St. Unies, you've done this, that and then, when you go in to work with the band and to teach them, what's your role in that, Christy? Is it coordination? Is it a timing? Is it literally actually how to play the instruments? Or what's the story?
Yeah, I started bands. I give advice because I came from a marching background. And then I taught music, and as we got more experience, we passed that on to committees. I was on committees as well, so there was a couple of levels I was helping out. It's good experience, and then it strengthens your journey. I taught 7 marching bands altogether over time, and then my mother wasn't well, so I had to back off a bit, and then I started other things then, musical projects, so...
Yeah, it's brilliant. And people are already texting and I was waiting for it. Christy is so well-loved. He taught me the tin whistle for years and sparked my love for music. I always wonder with people like you, Christy, who work with young people, you know, you see them developing as musicians, but there's something, isn't there, about sort of learning music or getting up onto the stage that you see the person grow as well, not just their, you know, their acumen or their ability to play. You see them develop, and that's a gift you've been giving people for generations too, I think.
Yeah, I'm giving, but they're giving back too. It really is a pleasure. And then when they go off on their own journey, and you see them again, it's hard to explain. It's explosive. It's like a drug that you're really... Like, I'm still teaching night classes. I retired in November teaching around schools, but I still do night classes. Recently, I started a trad group in Dale College, and now they're self-sufficient. And I have a session, and some of them are joining us in the session too. So it's, yeah, still there.
Yeah, so you don't like putting your feet up, let's put it like that. Hello to Christy from John Porter in Buncrana. John always wore the Donegal suit at the matches. Unfortunately, he hasn't got tickets for the final yet, hopefully. But he wishes Christy well. Another one coming in there along the same lines. Right, so what's your role, for those who don't know, and everyone knows, but what's your role then on Sunday, Christy?
Yeah, I hope to get down fairly early. Might even get over to the Bonington, I don't know.
Oh, but, I'd love to see you,
I'll be piping around Jones Road and outside Crow Park Hotel, a couple of pubs, probably a couple of hours before the game. And about an hour beforehand, I'll go into the concourse in Crow Park and pipe around there and put the pipes down for the game. And at halftime, I'll start again. And at the end of the game, then, no matter if we win or lose, I'll get the pipes going. It's very sore when you lose. But
well, we're not talking about that, Christy.
I was there in 2014, but...
Do you know, the funny thing is like, it's everything's a superstition. Like, we need, say, for instance, for this show on Monday, like, we're afraid to talk about what we're going to do on Monday because you can't say, you don't even want to say that if we win. Do you know what I mean? Like it's bizarre. Well, so we're me and Oisin and Shannon, and we're all looking at each other because we don't want to plan too much for Monday because you don't want to presume anything and jinx anything. It's crazy, isn't it?
I totally get you. I remember in 2012, there was a committee had a Donegal gathering, and they gave me a hat to wear for the final. And my daughter Ashton gave out straight away. She was so superstitious about it.
You got to ruin it all, Dad. Christy, exactly. Christy, a great fella. We'd be lost without him at games. It gives us a real identity when you see him playing. Keep piping, Christy. Keep our spirits up on Sunday. Hello to Christy from your music friends from Fannad. And another... there's still a very good active pipe band in Rafa. I met a young man last Sunday on the top of Errigal piping at 9 a.m. in the morning. It was lovely to see, and he said he was a member of the Ulster Scots in Rafa. Though there you go. Right, okay, so we'll hear your dulcet tones. Get on over to the Bonington if you can at some stage between 11 and 1 and give us a rattle, Christy. I know you're going to be busy, and as I say, you're an icon. People expect to see you at the games now, and you've been doing it for 25 years. You're going to be at Croke. You've got your ticket. You're sorted.
Well, I haven't got them yet. But...
Oh, bloody hell! Right, why did I say that?
It's all right. Great conversation around pubs.
Okay, listen. We'd love to see you down there, Christy. We will hear you if we don't see you. Have a great weekend. Chat to you soon.
Okay, great.
All right, bye bye. Take care of yourself. That is the legend, Christy Murray, the Donegal Piper. We'll be back with more and any more of your GAA stories. We'd love to hear them.